Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Fine, Mr. Allen. And by the way, everyone is preparing for the 9/11 piece, 15-year anniversary. Notice the TV have been doing a lot of promoing and et cetera. By the way, Sunday, I guess, they're going to show for the first time in 15 years tapes and audios, videos from inside the Twin Towers before they collapsed, if you will. So just kind of indicating to our listening audience across the world, that should be interesting.
Yeah, I wonder how much they paid for the rights to that. That's pretty interesting to see that.
Somebody made some money. Yeah.
Yeah.
But go ahead, my bro. What do we got, man? We on beautiful weather here. Once again, a lot of rain, but still the weather's beautiful. Sky's beautiful here in the Twin Cities.
Okay.
What do we got, Don?
Well, you remember earlier this year there was a controversy in the city of Columbia Heights, Minnesota, with a school board director named Grant Nichols, Mr. Edwards, and if you recall, he was accused of saying something. Not politically correct about the hygiene of Somalians or Muslims here in his school district. Well, what it turned out, Mr. Edwards, the place that he works, which will go unnamed because we want those people to keep their jobs. I mean, they got them anyway. Someone went in his locker and pulled out his phone and put that statement on his Facebook page via his telephone. But if you understand what happened, Mr. Edwards, Brenda Casellas, the Commissioner of Education, and Governor Mark Dayton came out to Columbia Heights School. The administration organized a student walkout. Asking Mr. Nichols to resign, and he wouldn't resign at the time. And so it got to the point where they were harassing his family. I mean, different students and people were, you know, putting bad things up on Facebook pages and social media about he and his family. And so he stepped down. Well, lo and behold, an exclusive for the Ron and Don Show, Black Focus, our Black News, and the Minneapolis story is a signed and notarized affidavit from his coworker who actually wrote the post. And a sworn statement was sent to us, which is now posted at ourblacknews.com.
All right, then, Tom. Way to go. Way to get that information out there. I understand you've negotiated with him. He's going to be with us next week?
Yes. He is planning to be on the air with us next week to talk about this, because this is pretty serious when the governor of the state, Mr. Edwards, and the education commissioner comes to a public school in a city where their achievement gap is probably, well, it is larger than Minneapolis, is number one. Students of color are not graduating. There are no jobs. And the graduation rate, you thought Minneapolis was bad. You know, open your eyes and look over here. And so nobody addressed that. But they attacked this guy and had him to resign, you know, from his school board job. And that's and that was always my question with him and the Columbia Heights School Board, because, as you know, Mr. Edwards, I live in Columbia Heights, so I'm pretty concerned about that, because I have to send my two young children 45 minutes away from the house every day for school in Minnesota.
Okay.
You know, because the schools out here are just not up to par like back when we were in high school, elementary school. And
now,
so,
I want you and our listening audience know where Columbia Heights, Minnesota is, if you will, approximately to, let's say, Minneapolis and St. Paul. And what county is it in, and what city is it next to?
Yeah, Columbia Heights is in Anoka County. It's on the northern fringe of North Minneapolis, off what we call here Broadway Avenue. The cities that border it are New Brighton on the east, Fridley on the north, and on the west side is Brooklyn Center, that area, and Hilltop.
Now, isn't Columbia Heights close to the municipality of St. Anthony, Minnesota, which has been so much in the news after the shooting death of an African-American by the name of Castile back in early July?
Yes, sir, Mr. Edwards, you can drive 2 minutes east, and you're in St. Anthony.
Okay.
Less than 2 minutes, and you're right in St. Anthony. So, yeah, it's a close-knit community, Mr. Edwards. They're getting ready to build a Hy-Vee grocery store out here. because, you know, Rainbow bailed out and left everybody, you know, going to Target and Cub Foods, and Cub Foods has really gone down the drain because that's over in St. Anthony, actually, and we don't, you know, people don't like to shop there, but Hy-Vee has made a promise to come in and do some wonderful things here in the old Rainbow spot off 43rd and Central.
Now, has there been a problem with the an influx of African Americans, coloreds, into Columbia Heights? Is this some of the reason for the collapse of the educational system there in Columbia Heights, Minnesota?
Well, let's start back. Let's maybe go back 10 years when we really started to see the effect of the Minneapolis public schools go down the tube, and a lot of parents said, "Well, Columbia Heights is a close suburb, and it's a basically white suburb, and you know, we'll send our kids out there to a white school." Little did they know, Mr. Edwards, that the scores out here were no better for them than going to North High or South High or Edison or Henry. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, the immigrant population started to come in from Somalia, Russia, Bosnia. And while the Bosnian students did well, the black or the dark-skinned students and that were immigrants did not do well. They did poorly. And, you know, what happened to us with 40, 50 years of education, they slipped right into and became a part of the mass numbers of the lower graduation rates, black Americans, Somali Americans, and, black Americans and, Somali Americans, I said it right that time. And so you have the system where there is the same thing plaguing their black community that plaguing our black community. But get to the answer to your question. There's a large influx of immigrants moving out here. And, you know, the city of Minneapolis, public schools, pays like around $20,000, $21,000 per student. That money follows them out here. So Columbia Heights is really key on recruiting these students from the Minneapolis public schools and getting other school districts and getting them out here. But what they have is infrastructure or construct set up that is not conducive to education. And getting back to my original point, the governor, the commissioner, needed to come out here and look at what's going on inside of school, make sure there was some cultural competency. Because I just have a picture, Mr. Edwards, of the new hires for the 2016-2017 school year. There's nobody darker than khaki in any of those pictures.
New employees. Are these teachers or maintenance workers or?
Well, the teachers, mostly teachers, but the new employees for the 2016-2017 school year.
Well,
which means they might stay there.
And by the way, we want to open the phone lines here in case there are any questions of my associate, Mr. Allen. We're 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904. This is the Don and Ron program. Mr. Allen, my associate, is talking in terms of Columbia Heights, Minnesota, and some peculiar things that are kind of going on in that community, if you will. Can you tell us a little bit about the Anoka County? Is that a pretty diverse county or what?
Well, you know, Anoka County, Mr. Edwards, spans from the right across the railroad tracks where the light rail comes from the north into downtown Minneapolis all the way out, you know, to like Anoka and a little bit further north and then east and west. It's a big area. And our Anoka County Commissioner is Robin West out here. And you have Anoka, you have all these different cities, St. Anthony, you have Blaine, you have what's up that way. I don't even go down that far. But you have different.
Well, did you say Fridley? You got Fridley. You got Hugo. You start going towards Hugo, Minnesota, Forest Lake, places like that, which are even more than so-called our bedroom communities. These are communities in which have grown by leaps and bounds as an outgrowth of the expanding situation. Because our metro area here is over 2.5 million, if I'm not correct, Mr. Allen, having my personnel check it on the computers. Yeah, so it's a lot of communities in a county, a couple counties that are not, well, I hate to say it, but are not notorious or legendary for diversity, even though there were African-Americans up in Anoka County. In fact, there was a real nice barbecue place. I hate to say it like that. That sounds stereotype right there on West River Road. back in the 1940s and 50s, man, and a lot of black folk and a lot of white celebrities, et cetera, used to go out there. And the owner at that time, Dan Law was his name. There's probably maybe a couple in my age group that are still left to remember Dan Law's. Man, it was popular for about 30 years. One of those, you know, typical places, you know, a wooden facility and et cetera, but nicely kept, but just out of sight. And I remember how out in Noka County, the folks were just great talking about, you know, their one Negro, Dan Law, who they loved. Now, Dan didn't take no crap, okay? Him and a guy by the name of Cicero Flood, who had the old Southern barbecue here in Minneapolis, were the two top guys, if you will. That's just a little history for those that really don't know the history of this community. But Dan Law was actually the only, for about 35, 40, 50 years, was the only African-American or Negro business in Anoka County. Yeah. Cecil Flood was the other individual. They were the two top barbecue guys in this part of the country, man. And like I said, the white folks love going there, man, and eating them ribs and listening to that boogie-woogie. Oh, that's a little bit before your time, Mr. Allen. I'm sorry, didn't mean to do that. Listening to that boogie-woogie and listening to those black artists and et cetera, man. And they used to, you know, really talk in terms of how they liked their colors. I mean, they basically liked to sing it and dance it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, go ahead on, Don. Are there any black teachers? I meant to ask, are there any black teachers in the Columbia Heights school district?
You know, Mr. Edwards, I walked in there a couple times and asked them the process to work there part-time, and they sent me on a wild goose chase. And I don't know. Maybe Mr. Nichols can inform us of the demographics of that teaching corps there, because by this picture, there is a black teacher. He or she is lonely. You know, and, you know, I have an opportunity this week, Mr. Edwards, to substitute as a vice principal in St. Paul. And I'm going to tell you, there's actually a diverse staff there. And I was really shocked to see this put together in an area like where I was in St. Paul. And coming back home out here to Columbia Heights and knowing that, you know, these people aren't even trying, you know, based on this picture and previous pictures that I'm starting to look at here. They're not even trying to come close to any cultural competency. The demographics in the school, Mr. Edwards, is 33%, you know, African American alone. That's not even talking about the Asians or the Hispanic Latinos, you know, which probably would bring it up around more than half of the student body is a student body of color. So for them not to have the diverse, you know, just this hiring picture right here, this 2016-2017 school year hiring picture, it's disgusting, actually.
Right.
There's no learning.
Now, let me say something, because now, let's see, Columbia Heights is up in Anoka County, but if I remember correctly, the NAACP of Minneapolis takes jurisdictional claim, if you will, just like the St. Paul NAACP takes jurisdictional claim for Falcon Heights, where Mr. Castile was shot and killed. I understand last night the NAACP preparing for their next election, if you will, which be November the 1st. Has the NAACP of Minneapolis been out in Anoka County, or, you know, in Columbia Heights, which is in Anoka County, to kind of assess the opportunities for African Americans?
You know what, Mr. Edwards, there's not a news crew, there's not a freeway out here to block, and no one's having a state fair on the school campus, so no. I mean, they haven't, I'm being facetious, but no, they're not coming out here. They're not, you know, this is not what the current sorority of the NAACP is interested in. You know, this is not a, even education overall. Because, you know, if you wield that much political clout as they did blocking freeways, bridges, the governor's mansion.
Police stations.
I mean, if you're going to do that, 18-day
occupation, as they called it, they didn't occupy the station, though. They occupied the grounds in and around and the streets and et cetera. But I kind of wondered, because there were some postings here in the Twin Cities that indicated that the current incumbents of the NAACP of Minneapolis were indicating that they may not run again, though last night's gathering was for the purpose of putting together an election committee. And then in October, the nominations committee will come back in with the nominations. And on November 1st, the NAACP of Minneapolis will hold an election to either reelect and reestablish its current leadership, or there will be some changes. I'm not sure. I was kind of wondering. I didn't see anything in the African-American papers, Insight, and the spokesman recorder. I didn't see any announcements about the meeting last night.
No, I got an email, Mr. Edward, to tell you the truth. I did get an email, but I didn't see any announcements.
Oh, that's right, that's right. You are a member in good standing. That's right, that's right, that's right. I have to be dependent on you because I am exiled. But, and what did it say, Mr. Allen? Can you share it with us?
It said that, let me actually go to it here while we're talking because I need to, it is kind of funny. Let me just pull it up here. I'm actually on the computer now. I'm looking for opening the email account that they sent it to. I have them send it to a sub email account that I don't use that often. Just in case they find some hackers. Let me see. The secretary's name, which she's a public person, is Carrie Joe. Carrie. And let me pull this up. And, okay, that's not it. Here we go. Still looking here. I do have an email. I just have to find where it is, Mr.
Okay,
Edwards, while we're looking
but there,
here.
There was something sent out saying that there would be a meeting last night in somewhere in North Minneapolis, and the election committee. Want to be sure, because Mr. Allen and I study the Constitution and bylaws of the NAACP, and so the first step is the election. Have to elect, if I'm not mistaken. Hope they had a quorum. Got to have a quorum, too, by the way. So that would meant that I wonder what their quorum would be, about 40, 45, 50, because they, last year at this time, they were talking in terms they had over 300 card-carrying members. And so
yeah,
they would have
here,
a nice quorum last night in order to elect a election committee. Election committee would be the entity to put in place the process, the procedure, the protocol, and begin to check to make sure that those that were giving notification of the intent to stand for office were members in good standing. Because if I'm not mistaken, I remember they kind of sent you through that a couple years ago when you were a member of the executive committee under President the Reverend Jerry McGee. They tried to say that you hadn't been a member since April.
Yeah.
I got to tell my listening audience that Mr. Allen wound up getting three different membership cards after he filed a protest with the national office in Baltimore. You got three membership cards, haven't you?
They send me three every year, so I'm gonna vote three times. Okay, it's not voter fraud because all of them got different numbers on them. Okay.
Wow, isn't that something? Maybe no wonder that the NAACP is having financial problems, if you will. But yeah, it started to be important to get that information out. Again, folks have the phone number, and maybe they have some. Maybe some questions of us and et cetera. A lot going on. Federal investigations and et cetera are taking place. It's not an easy time, if you will. Shootings continue. We had a individual shot at 5th and Lake Street last night. Do you know that's the 7th shooting on that particular corner this year? Just that corner.
That must
just
be
that
the
whole corner,
soul or something. Wow, yeah. Wow. Mr. Edwards, we do have a caller, sir.
Okay, let's get him in. We were expecting the possibility of an inquiry. Caller, go ahead. What's your question?
Oh, Mr. Edwards, I was just looking at your website here. And I know it's kind of stretchy.
Okay, you're calling from, I see. You're calling
punk from
upstate. Dirt. Okay. And yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah.
What's your question?
Well, I was just curious if you could give me some background. Exactly what's going on with the I believe there's a case that's been going on for the past, I'd say, 10 years or so. Is that correct, with with a sergeant or Lieutenant Keefe, and then the Black Police Officers Association.
Well, there is no Black Police Officers Association now. There used to be.
It used to be. Okay.
Yeah, they were kind of dismantled. Yes, I as a journalist have written about you. The name that you're mentioning is now Sergeant Michael Keefe, former lieutenant, who was demoted because I have to say it in my own way, that he stood up for African American police officers and etc. at a time of great turbulence and conspiracy and etc. here. In this city and in that department. Yes. And I did post some things on my website over the last 7 or 8 days as there are developments that are taking place that are kind of being suppressed by our local newspaper.
Oh, okay. And this jumped from basically the state level to the, I guess, the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. And then on to the Justice Department. It's gone to the Justice Department.
Yes, it has. Obviously, you have been reading the website. It was a year-long investigation by the Judiciary Committee under Senator Grassley of Iowa, state just south of us there. He is the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee. He's the chairman. An investigation, a year-long investigation, was conducted. Pieces and parts of the case was reopened in regards to lawsuits and et cetera. We had a lawsuit here called the Mill City Five in which five African-American officers sued for violations of their rights and they were being denied promotion and et cetera. That was officers, I think it's probably on the website, but officers Adams, Arredondo, Hamilton, Harris, and Edwards. By the way, just for the listening audience, the Edwards in question is not related. We are not related. He's a fine man, just retired here. Lee Edwards, Lieutenant Lee Edwards, who retired from the police department about 2 months ago, if you will, had a very long and distinguished history. In fact, at one time he was an inspector of police and presided over the 4th Precinct, and also at one time he was the head of our homicide unit, so he had some excellent credentials. But those five officers sued and were awarded $750,000 in damages, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah.
As I understand it, you also are part of this case. Did you give a grand jury testimony at any point?
In July of 2008, I was brought before a federal grand jury to discuss my knowledge and understanding of the conspiracy and other kinds of actions. At one point, I was identified as a person of interest because I had been incorrectly and misidentified by a federal informant, probably one of the top in the country, who really worked his magic here. He went by the street name of Volachi, if you will, and he had been providing information to the special task force here. Task force was called the VOTAC. Violent Offenders Task Force. They were some mean individuals. Never would allow any African Americans to be assigned to that unit. That was one of the things that began to bring about significant animosity between white officers and this group of African American officers. And ultimately, in 2006, sir, a plan was put together by key members of the VOTOC unit to discredit and, if necessary, imprison African-American officers. One African-American officer, in fact, the most senior African-American officer in the department at that time with better than 30-some years, was indicted and did plead guilty, but not to the charge he was originally charged with. He was charged with income tax evasion. Initially, he was being charged with violation of of integrity, what is called public integrity. But to your question, sir, I don't want to appear to be skipping it. Yes, I was brought before a federal grand jury in July of 2008 and gave testimony. It was interesting because a lot of the testimony had to do with crooked black police officers, which I don't know where they were what they were talking about. I was questioned about Balachi. I was questioned about Michael Keith, then a lieutenant, since demoted to a sergeant. And yes, I certainly did give testimony.
Oh, okay. And then also, I noticed on your website here that you you talk about Rule 18, and this is what's, I guess, going to be like the basis of any prosecution, probably, or is that? Am I reading that correct? Or
actually, my colleague, yeah. Mr. Allen, on that same question that was posed, and he had prepared for last week's program. He shared with our national and international audience Rule 18. Rule 18 is a part of the criminal code. Mm-hmm. It is a specific provision that talks in terms of those that are involved in conspiracy and criminal acts against sitting public officials and et cetera, which the black officers were. Lieutenant Keith certainly was, if you will, by other public officials. Oops.
Uh-huh.
And that is the specific legal tenor, if you will, of Rule 18. And it is my understanding that it was that particular rule that on a straight party line vote, the Republicans, under a specific rule dealing with separation of powers, notified the Department of Justice that there had been serious constitutional and civil rights violation of the rights of Lieutenant Keith, now Sergeant, and African-American officers, which was never truly and honestly investigated, and that based on that violation, based on the structure of Rule 18, that the Department of Justice, the Obama administration, was now obligated to commence a federal investigation and impanel a federal grand jury. This has created some real problems for, and it's interesting, sir, that you know, you asked this. I think you've seen some additional material on my posting.
Uh-huh.
Is that actually both senators from the state of Minnesota are on the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah,
Senators Klobuchar and Franken. And one of the things that really sent up a red flag for the Republicans, as now is what is being stated out of Washington, was when the question of the protection of the rights, constitutional and civil rights of African-American law enforcement officers was not dealt with. You know, what did that mean in a place in which I'm not sure, sir, how familiar you are with how liberal we supposedly are here in Minnesota. But the Republicans, particularly led by people like Lindsey Graham, Senator Sessions, if you will, Senator Cornyn, Senator Cruz, who led the charge against the Minnesota senators who are on the Judiciary Committee. And after a year of investigation, as I said, the Judiciary Committee was able to impress upon the Obama administration the importance of further dealing with this, particularly in light of the fact that in an article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, which is the presiding paper here, the largest paper in the state, that in an article dated 19 April 2009, that there was reference to an individual who had been working as an operative for the VOTEC unit. They had leaked the information, and her husband was assassinated in the early part of 2006 or 7, if you will. I would refer you, sir, to the four-part series in the Minneapolis Star Tribune starting April 19th, 2009, It's rather scary, if you will. It's kind of eerie. But what has basically happened, a targeted murder took place, and, you know, the Republicans apparently had asked the question, how come there wasn't a more committed pursuit by the Democrats here to bring to justice the person that shot and killed the woman in question, who is in the article of April 19th, 2009, a Miss Sheila Haynes, if you will. I hope that answers some of what you've talked about.
Oh, yeah, and also I guess, excuse me, the since you no longer have a Black Police Officers Association, is that in part because of the conspiracy? Is that what they're talking about, basically? The attack on the Black police.
Yeah, yes, it did, sir, because it scared some of the African-American officers. They thought that some of their colleagues, based on the misrepresentation, lies, conspiracy, and et cetera, that some of their officers, most senior officers, had been involved in criminal acts, collusion, distribution of drugs, assignment.
Yeah.
Of assassinations and et cetera, kind of sounded like Chicago. In fact, to try to help you with that, a lot of people probably like to try to forget this. In April of 2011, the Minneapolis Star Tribune ran a interesting story on its so-called regional. And I think if you read my postings, I think you saw this in the last 24 hours. The headline was, two officers sue alleged retaliation, alleged retaliatory demotions. These were sheriff's deputies King and Smith, who used to be members of the Minneapolis Police Department, transferred over to the sheriff's department, if you will, where they run the sheriff's VOTEC unit, which races up and down the streets of North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, and et cetera. I don't know if they're stopping. The reason I make reference to this is that when the trial of these two officers, in which they were suing not the chief, Tim Dolan, at the time of this action, but were suing the mayor at that time, the chief of the deputy chief of the department. But I have to say this, sir, and if you have any additional questions, certainly, you know, stay with us. There was, on the third day of the trial that took place, in 2011, testimony by a deputy chief, Gerlicher, because, I don't want nobody calling in and talking about, we've made up anything, sir, because you're asking some fairly pointed questions. Mm-hmm. Deputy Chief Gerlicher was brought in by the prosecution to talk in terms of a sting operation that members of the VOTEC unit ran. I hate to say this, sir, but a sting operation they ran on the DEA and knocked them off for about $100,000 in what was supposed to be an alleged drug purchase in Chicago, in which the two officers, this is the testimony of Gerlicher now, you are the first person that has kind of raised enough questions to cause me to talk about this, though I talked about it in the grand jury. Gerlicher laid out how the scam went down and the theft and the fraud, and that was that a purchase was to be made by a couple of drug dealers out of Minneapolis who went to Chicago and then maintained they got stuck up. And as an outgrowth of that, the DEA supervisor in this region was transferred. Sent him down to New Mexico, put him out there in that hot sun. And so that testimony, which was the story was written by the most senior writer of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Randy First, and people may want to go back into their computers and et cetera and take a look at the testimony at that trial. But what happened was the judge, it was what is called, sir, a bench trial. There was no jury, just a white judge, by the way. The judge found against them, against the two officers who later were to become sheriff's deputies. They just transferred over to the sheriff's department. He ruled against them, if you will. And the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee over the last year have raised questions about that and raised questions on why these two officers who had been involved in a conspiracy against the interest of federal law enforcement agencies were that no action was taken against them, particularly based on the testimony of Deputy Chief Gerlacher at that particular time. Ooh. Deputy Chief Gerlacher, by the way, is still with the Manassas Police Department. He is a commander, if you will. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he is going to be handling the security here in our beloved city for the Super Bowl.
No.
So I hope that I'm giving you information, because it's quite clear to me that you have been analyzing and you folks have been reading some of the postings over the last 7-8 days. Are there any other questions, sir, that you may have?
Because I don't want to skirt anything.
Just
sort of one question about the confidential informants involved in this case. It's my understanding that they actually, at least in one case, named names of police officers who were providing information to, I think, a member of the Gangster Disciples, for instance.
Yes.
Yeah. And but these people are, for some reason, I don't know. You probably have a better understanding of the inner workings of the Minneapolis Police Department, but
I do.
Not only, I guess, Valachi, I believe you had mentioned before.
Valachi, known as Valachi.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He had mentioned these police officers, and I believe She Baby, as you said, had also
Sheila Haynes, actually, her street name was a.k.a. She Baby.
It seems like they, it seems like the Minneapolis Police Department kind of can never find enough evidence, it seems, for those allegations.
Well, sir, what happened there,
and
obviously you've been reading, it's almost like you were in the grand jury. what the white officers on the VOTAC unit did was despicable. And what they basically did, and it was her that finally called it to the attention of FBI agents, which ultimately led to all kinds of political shenanigans, and which now is one of the reasons that Senator Grassley has pushed so hard on opening a federal investigation of this entire matter. She had a audio and video recording. I on my television program here, which is now in its 26th year, I showed a relic, if you will, of the electronic device that she used to record drug purchases, the discussions of contracts being put on individuals, continuing and encouraging warfare amongst African-American gangs and et cetera. She had a hidden camera in what appeared to be a Coke bottle. And no one paid any attention. They just thought she was sitting there drinking Coke, because the very top half, the first one-fourth of the bottle, did actually have liquid. The rest of the bottle was a combination of a camera and a recording system. And so to your specific question, sir, she had identified white officers, and she had empirical data and information. It was interesting that Ms. Haynes, who I'm not even sure is still alive, if you understand what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
she was never called before a grand jury, nor was she called at trial. And it's my understanding, again, that the Judiciary Committee, the Republicans, Ted Cruz and people like that, we kind of think are bad people, asked a number of questions about what the situation was with some of these people, and particularly Ms. Haynes was of great interest. And apparently no one can confirm if she is still alive, if you mean.
Before
her husband was assassinated, shot and killed in a hallway at an apartment complex on what is called Plymouth Avenue. So you've asked some questions that are taking us pretty deep, that the Star Tribune was made aware of in May of this year and has declined to reopen any aspect of their investigation, and they have a reporter on their paper who, in fact, is being looked at for perjury by the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now I also understand that there are some police officers who are also being looked at for perjury, correct? Is that?
There's a whole group of them. In fact, there are at least five who are specifically being looked at, according to sources in Washington available to this commentator, who are still going about their business. In fact, one of them is a member of the highly touted shooting team, which is supposedly cleaning up the North Side from gun violence and et cetera, who we had a situation on the 15th of September in this city in which this officer passed information to a gunman who shot a young man six times. He did not kill him. He shot him in the lower extremities. He shot him six times on what we call Lowry and North 6th Street. That individual turned out to be a federal informant also.
Oh. Now, this is a very interesting case you've got here. So I'll listen off the air, but thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
Thank you, sir. I respect the fact that you've asked the question. I hope that I have answered it, if you will. Mr. Allen and myself are gentlemen that have nothing to hide. So feel free to call back as things continue to mature, because I will be putting additional information on my blog, my personal blog, as this moves on. In fact, on tomorrow I will discuss two prosecutors who prosecuted and really was trying to prosecute black officers who were rewarded by the Democratic machine here in Minnesota with appointments to the state district court bench, one out of Scott County, the other one out of Hennepin County. So, sir, you, wherever you're calling from, you just got an exclusive.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, Mr. Allman, I don't know if we got any calls. I doubt if anybody want to ask us anything, but any thoughts on your mind?
That's getting pretty deep there. I'm glad this is all recorded, Mr. Edwards, so we have documented archive of this show. Once it starts, mm-hmm, the news starts rattling off, like they're the main the main news people. But speaking of the Star Tribune, just posted 8 p.m. tonight, Coach Jay Robinson fired in wake of you wrestling drug probe.
I've known Jay to the extent of his relationship because he's been there for a little over 30 years. Now, you know, you remember we were really the only media that did it in this town last year when they fired Norwood Teague, who pulled some dirty tricks on a couple of African-American coaches, particularly the beloved Tubby Smith, who is now at Memphis and in the Basketball Hall of Fame. You know, we said on these programs, again, my associate, Mr. Allen, has just pointed out that all of our programs are on demand. So if you can find a date, you can go back and call, you know, that program will be called up. We talked about Norwood T a year and a half ago. And we talked about his relationship with the writer and the reporter and what was going on and the partying and all that other kind of stuff. And I told you then, Norwood Teague had problems in Virginia, okay? And he actually brought a girlfriend of his here to be the women's basketball coach. Nobody wants to talk about that. Everybody wants to play crazy. He brought the current men's basketball coach here, who is overmatched clearly and concisely. But you are absolutely correct. Now, in the case of Jay Robinson, what they got to be careful of, Don, and you said that was posted about 8 o'clock this evening, Central Standard Daylight Time.
Yes, sir.
They got to be careful, because I'm telling you, man, see, Jay Robinson was there back in the day, almost in the days of Clem Haskins. Robinson knows a lot of secrets. He knows where a lot of skeletons are, man. So I hope that the president of the University of Minnesota and their Board of Regents got their lawyers in place, because unless they can minimize the damage that they have done to Coach Robinson's reputation and et cetera, they could have a hell of a lawsuit on their hands. It would remind me of what happened when Clem Haskins brought the lawsuit against them 20 years ago.
Yeah,
after the incident in Madison, Wisconsin. But, yeah, But and, see, us black folks ain't supposed to remember stuff like that or know stuff like that.
No, not at all. And, you know, I never thought, you know, I was following this not that close, Mr. Edwards, but, you know, I was like, the guy had been there for 30 years, and he didn't want to discipline the guys traditionally because it would have blew up. But they made him a scapegoat. Now, these guys
yes,
are probably still all in school. Mm-hmm. You know, they're probably all still in school and doing what he does. And under his contract, he gets paid $146,000, Mr. Edwards, through the year 2020.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think it's fair, particularly in that he is really the only coach, maybe other than the golf coach, who has won national championships, and he's won more than one. And he certainly has put Minnesota on the map as a collegiate wrestling power. And yet he's making more money than the current basketball coach who can't even get to an NCAA tournament, which is supposed to be the prerequisite for you being the Golden Boy. Because also I noticed they've been messing with the hockey coach, Lucia, who also has national championships and a tremendous reputation, but Norwood Teague had that institution all messed up. Now the guy that they brought in here, he really thinks he's doing the right thing, but I don't think he really knows and understands Minnesota politics.
No, not at all. I agree with you 100% on that. But yeah, that's posted on the Ron and Don Show website if you want to read that. And it's all about some kids passing around some drug. I didn't get into it, but and he made them write papers, Mr. Edwards. What you do when you're in college? You write a lot.
That's right. That's what he did. He also says that he had conversations with the interim athletic director, Ms. Gutz, and which he told them what was happening, and they sucker punched him. And it's going to be interesting, man. If they cannot satisfy Jay Robinson's feeling of betrayal and et cetera, I'd sure like to be in one of them depositions.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the phone line is still open, man. Any calls, anybody wants to? I'm amazed that the people are so silent on how much. The caller that we just had, Mr. Allen, is quite clear that he may have been someone connected with the federal government. He knew quite a bit about a lot of what happened in the grand jury. That's interesting. So he very well could be somebody that, But anyways, phone line's open, man. Get that number out, Don, because, you know, this is our beloved city, man. We're so liberal here, we don't know what to do.
Yeah, we're turning all kinds of colors. 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we got a little, you know, it's 9:17. We're going to 9:30. So you got some time to call in.
Mm-hmm.
And ask some questions or do whatever you need to do.
Don, let's do this right after making it matter. But what was your thinking on, and what are you seeing on the websites and et cetera? Donald Trump gave his quote-unquote plan for the defense of America, if you will, increasing the military and et cetera, and crushing the little brown people of the Middle East. Have you had an opportunity to review his speech this afternoon before the veterans?
I saw some headlines, and it says Trump levels harsh criticism against U.S. generals. And I think some of his criticism is aimed in the right way. But then again, you know, I'm looking at MSNBC and NBC. And last night, Mr. Edwards got a chance to sit back and watch that Rachel Maddow on MSNBC.
Rachel Maddow?
And Maddow, yeah. And,
yeah.
You know, she's a news anchor there, of course, you know, has her own show. And my thing is, Mr. Edwards, you know, we might like someone or dislike someone, but before we're going to report the news as, you know, straightforward as we can and then get to our opinions afterward, okay?
Gotcha.
What I didn't like about what Rachel was doing, excuse me, got a little hay fever, she was saying, oh, yeah, and that Donald Trump. And he's going to do this? He can't do that. You know, I'm like, what are you talking? This isn't even news. You might as well go on and have a Geraldo show or something, because it wasn't a news show. It was absolutely ridiculous. And so it was kind of sickening. And after about half hour of that, just had to get rid of it and turn it off. But they're so slanted, so biased, so to the left.
Yes, I know you from the right are concerned, but I think all of us are beginning to be concerned, particularly in light of what is happening to Clinton and those emails and Now, they say the last 30 that they found were nothing more than duplicates, and the feds say that they already had it, if you will. But I don't know. You know, Donald Trump made some pretty aggressive and ugly statements this afternoon in Philadelphia to the veterans that have served our nation with a great passion and danger and et cetera. So, I can hear. By the way, you know that I still can't understand why Ms. Clinton never went to Baton Rouge. I still, Don, can't understand that.
Yeah.
To a loyal African-American base there in Baton Rouge in central Louisiana. I just did not understand that. I still don't understand it. And I also don't understand when she's going to set a date and time certain to meet with Mexico's president. Now, everybody's calling Donald Trump a racist, but at least Donald Trump went down there and faced off with Mexico's president. Have you heard anything new, or is Hillary going to be able to do this before the national election, or what?
No, I don't know what she's planning, because she hasn't had a press conference in, over 200 days?
Yeah.
You know, and she's not answering no questions, and, you know, I'm waiting for the debates, Mr. Evans. That's going to, you know, Don on the right, I think the debates is going to push Donald Trump over the top. Because he's not going to take no place.
Ron Edwards on the left. Geez, I hate to think of that, because I thought that a couple months ago, 10 weeks ago, I thought Ms. Clinton had the momentum. She kind of got sluggish in August, and, you know, Donald's doing his thing, man. The Donald, you know, and I'm just kind of wondering. And he keeps getting more of them black preachers sitting up there supporting him. I'm not sure what that's all about, if you will. But he could be on a roll. Now they're saying that on the national polls that they're dead even. Well, so I don't know, Don. I hate to give credit to you and the rest of those on the right, but I just don't think Clinton has managed her campaign very well. Well, maybe let me just shift gears on you a little bit. Maybe we'll see a better campaign in the leadership of the NAACP. I find it amazing we have gotten no calls and no challenges. I imagine everybody must have probably been at a barbecue or something tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. No one's even trying to hear anything. Let me just check back there. Oh, we have a caller.
All right, let's get the caller because we have about 10 minutes left. Is that correct? All right, get the caller.
Let's get him on. Caller, you're live on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from? Come on in.
Gentlemen, this is Mr. M. I'm calling from my palatial estate somewhere in the Twin Cities area.
Oh, thank you, Doctor. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. M. Thank you. Your observations,
your programs really, you know, they just really give so much information. It's hard to kind of pinpoint. But, you know, one thing I'm really happy about is that we really have pinned Mr. Allen down, that he's all in on Mr. Trump. I was kind of curious about that, you know, but now I've been definitely given the answer that he is all in. He's pushed all his chips in there. So now we know that.
He kind of poured, you know, some cold water on me just in the last couple of minutes as he's talking about, because I can't, as a journalist and historian, I just can't say, oh, that's crazy, Don, because, you know, they said Trump didn't have a plan. He came out with his version of the plan. He talked in terms of the generals. And by the way, everybody should be concerned of the number of retired generals and admirals that came out in support of him yesterday at the Veterans Convention in Philadelphia. I'd be a little concerned. One thing you don't want in this country or any country, you don't want an unhappy military. Oops.
Well, along with that vein, I guess, you know, to kind of put things in a nutshell to what I've been thinking with your program, what I've been reading in the paper, I don't see why we don't have some type of an expose in the paper that's titled, well, you know, with all the misdeeds at the University of Minnesota, now with the wrestling coach and Norwood Teague and, you know, the sad situation with the young man that was found, the Wetterling situation. I mean, just
that is so sad that it's so
difficult to even talk about that,
you
know, the pain that that's caused.
Yes.
But then, you know, the Fox News and, you know, what they're doing with sexual harassment and ITT college. Taking all these
and let me just say for
money.
Our listening audience, in case you didn't catch it in this morning's paper here on the news, ITT went under and they took 8,000 of their employees with them. 8,000 people got up this morning and had no jobs. 8,000
took the employees
people.
And took the students, took all the students that were close to graduating, and now those that have graduated in the past, well, they're going to be looked at with a jaundiced eye for the education that they've had. You know,
yes.
That's not going to allow them to get, you know, the type of career that they planned on or that they paid for. And then, you know, you have all of this warden disciplining, you know, this warden that's been gallivanting
around. At my institution up there at Stillwater, the second largest penitentiary here in the state of Minnesota, Warden Hammer, if I'm not mistaken, is his name.
And he's had a track record for such indiscretions. I mean, this wasn't
yes,
the first
I,
time.
I appreciate the delicacy of your wording. Yes, a history of indiscretions. I don't know how he got appointed as the warden in the first place, coming over from a much smaller
institution.
Supposed
to be such background checks and all of these vettings that they're supposed to be doing. You know, I guess my overall response to all this, why don't we just have an expose in the paper say white folks doing wrong?
I knew you were going there, and I think even my colleague, Mr. Allen, agrees. I knew you were going there, and I think that's absolutely correct. I mean, I don't see anything talking about Denny Hendrick. Where did this evil devil come from? I mean, who were his mommy and daddy? What schools did he attend? What kind of jobs has he been working? Has he been going around the country killing young people for a number of years? And how did he basically, you know, tiptoe and tiptoe for 27 years, man, after brutally raping and then shooting this 11-year-old child, man? But
he's been on their radar, and he has done this to other people. He's been on their radar. So, you know, I mean, I see the things that with black people getting killed for having the supposedly the light out in the back of the car and the signal out. And I mean, it's just, I mean, the atrocity that is going on here, and that the newspaper and the media, only programs like this are willing, you know, to at least bring these things into the debate.
Because that's the role of Don and Ron. I mean, that's what blog radio we were initially told that was expected to be about. And I appreciate your call because, you know, you kind of think with the silence on the phones and et cetera that we were just talking to each other. And but we got a hell of a call from somewhere outside of the state of Minnesota and et cetera, and then also from you. But I think your point is well taken, and I just think that Mr. Allen and I have to be a little bit more aggressive in raising questions, though Mr. Allen is going to have a individual on next week who is going to tell a horrifying story about how he was treated when the folks went over the edge and forgot, due process and innocent until proven guilty. But at least he'll get that consideration. If you're black in America, you don't get that at all. You know, at best you may get a bullet to the head.
It just points out so much different rules for different people. I mean, it just seems.
Did you see what Goldman Sachs did? They told their employees they can't give money to Donald Trump. I have to say it on your side, Don. They said that they couldn't, the folks couldn't give money to Donald Trump, but they give money to Hillary Clinton and Senator Kaine. Now I've never seen anything like that.
That's crazy.
Goldman Sachs, man. A firm, by the way, that should have been indicted and dissolved by the Obama administration after the fiasco of 2008. That's the same company, and yet they pulled this. I don't understand what's happening, man.
Continued white folks doing
crazy.
Wrong.
That's right. Yeah, all right, appreciate it. Yeah. I could hear Don. We're pretty much up to, we're a minute away. Appreciate it. Hey, get in a little bit earlier, man, because I think you're raising a doggone good question. When are we going to talk about the decadence, in white America?
Yeah, I'll be tuning in next week, and I may bring something I've been really researching on the Hennepin County Child Protection Area. I may bring in some information that I think citizens would like to know about.
All right, Em, we appreciate it. We look forward to hearing from you next week. All right. All right.
All right.
Mr. Allen, I think, in that program, we can't make people express their observations, et cetera, but, you know, they got a caller from somewhere outside the state of Minnesota that looked like they knew more about what was going on here than most folks, except the individuals on this program. But hey, man, let James Brown take us on in, and hope we don't have any more shootings tonight. Oops.
Yep, seriously.
All right.